This is Corolla Digital.
Hi, folks. I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And this week, on This Week with Larry Miller, I describe to you how there's no such thing as a free breakfast. Even when it's free, it's not free. Listen to us through iTunes or the free Adam Carolla app. We'll see you here.
Now, it's time for this week's CarCast with your host, Adam Carolla, and moderator, Matt D'Andrea.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. And thank you so much for checking out the CarCast, everybody. We do appreciate it. Glad to have you on board. And if you like cars, or you know somebody who likes cars, you have a friend who likes cars, you turn them on to this show, and they can come join the party. Good to see you, Matt D'Andrea.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Busy, yeah. Running around, spending a lot of time in my car, driving to Dana Point and back, doing contractor shows.
I know you're the only one working on that show. The rest of us aren't here, but the rest of us are suffering from your schedule.
Yes, because I'm a prick. And because I have to constantly be somewhere.
It's rough. I juggle everything around. So much stuff going on.
Well, what I do, and, I don't know, since we're talking about cars, let's talk about things you can do in your car. I work on my book, which is due the beginning of the year. The first of the year, maybe they'll give me to the second. I think I'll be hungover on the first.
Is there a ticket you can get for writing a book while driving?
They don't know what I'm talking about because I'm talking to Mike Lynch, who's in Lowell, Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah.
And he's sitting there and he's reading the chapters to me. And it's like, it's the stupidest thing in the world. It's like I'm sitting in a beautiful Jaguar. I'm stuck in traffic on the 5. He's reading the chapter, or at least the part, I'm running for president in this book, and the weights and measurements chapter, and he's talking about the one where I want the water displacement for everyone's penis, and then I want the windbreaker made up, not with how much water you displace, but your ranking.
Okay.
And I was saying to him, well, there's 100... There's 100, I don't know, what is there, 320 million people in the United States,
Yeah.
So I figure a little less than half of that are male, but what percentage of that or what numbers over 18? So I just figured, 100 million plus males over 18.
Okay.
We all take the test.
Okay.
And you go into the graduated cylinder, you displace the water, then you get the windbreaker, and the last... week in June, everyone has to wear their windbreaker that entire week. And the guys that are in the single-digit clubs, they're doing the talk show circuits and stuff. But the conversation is funny because I'm sitting in traffic on the 5 looking at Disneyland's Matterhorn to my left, which means I'm still a long way from home, especially since I'm moving 4 miles an hour and it's starting to rain now.
Yeah.
And I got to get to the studio and interview Penn Jillette at whatever time, blah, blah, blah. And I'm talking to Mike Lynch, who's sitting at his computer in Lowell, and I'm saying, Mike, don't say lower yourself down with your dick through a hole in aluminum. That doesn't make sense. Let's say you lay on the aluminum, put your dick through the hole, and then have the graduated cylinder rise up. That makes more sense because then the next sentence you say, everybody'd be forced to lay on this thing, but that's not lower down. It's like the dumbest conversation.
He's not thinking about the mechanics of how
to... He's not working out the mechanics. But here's the thing. Every day, thousands of young males turn 18 and would thus need to be measured again. So there's always a lot of intrigue to see who's holding that number one jacket. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's a big – you want to talk about a big TV event. Every year we do the re-ranking and the unveiling, and that guy becomes a national hero. Awesome, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I'm doing in the 3 hours it takes me to get from Dana Point.
Do you have that conversation on speakerphone with the windows down? It's like I just...
Windows up, speakerphone, heat seater on.
Yeah.
Heat seater. Seat heater. I always say that. Anyway, that's what I do. And then the next day when it's time to head down to the BevMo and I have to sign all the labels, Mike August drives, yeah, and I sit in the car and I signed, I don't know, 500 Mangria labels. So you're going to be in your car. You're going to be in traffic. You could play games like count the U-Hauls and punch your sister in the arm kind of games. But it's, you know, unless you know, we're not working where we're having to till soil and, right, and farm anymore. You can get a lot of business done.
All my phone calls are done in the car. Pop in a headset, do all my phone calls.
Right. And every single time Matt says to me, Joe Dickwad from podcast you've never heard of wants an interview with you, he's a huge fan, I always go, all right, we're going to the Glendora BevMo.
That takes an hour.
It's like an hour. Friday. Tell him Friday, 4:15.
Right.
And then I'm just sitting in a car.
Yeah.
Poor Mike August has heard me do 200,000 hours worth of interviews while he just drove the car. Thank,
yeah,
God he's more reptile than man. Otherwise, it would drive him insane.
Well, when we did that drive up to Monterey, not this past year, maybe it was the year before, you were doing PR for your book, and you're like, all right, everybody be quiet for the first 3 hours. And it just interviews the whole time.
I did a radio tour from the passenger seat and literally just did 31
radio stations. There's some crazy woman on the other
line,
right, and she's just like, stand by for this guy, stand by for this guy, stand by for this guy. And right, it's like, it's cool, but... But we heard the same exact thing 40, 50 times.
Yes.
Because it's, you know, it's like you're saying, it's a radio tour. It's not one interview. But anyway, that's your life, buddy. That's
my life. And now it's yours as well.
Next week, I am going to be at the SEMA show.
Mm.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be the biggest SEMA show. It's 1 million square feet, over 2,500 vendors, 130,000 people are going to show up. Like, it's really, really growing. It's going to be
so
huge.
They have... The SEMA show has grown every year for the last 40 years, or
pretty much.
We figured out when,
you know,
it started.
When the economy tanked,
it flattened out a little bit in 08, 09, or whatever, and rightfully so. People couldn't buy triple chrome brush guards for their trucks. Yeah. a bunch of accessory shit that would piss your wife off that you'd buy for your car.
Yeah.
When you wanted to deck out your Ford F-250 like the Fall Guys truck, she was not going to let you do that. By the way, in the pantheon of cars I see done up, I see first and foremost Starsky and Hutch. See the Starsky and Hutch Gran Torino done up around L.A. a lot.
Yeah.
I see the A-Team van done up.
Yeah, I've been in one.
Dukes of Hazzard. Fall Guy truck is something that someone could tip a cap to every now and again. I would enjoy it. I don't think the rest of the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I don't think, like, you wouldn't drive through, Glendale and have a bunch of 22-year-old Armenians going, hey, this Fall Guy. They just think you're a dick.
Right.
But I would know.
Yeah. I can appreciate that, Fall Guy truck.
Mm-hmm. Hot truck. Yeah.
So it's going to be a nutty show. Chris is coming with me. For a day or two, we're gonna crank out a couple of interviews for CarCast. It'll be audio. We'll get a bunch.
Basically, the economy's
photos.
Back.
Yeah,
and so people are back with their cars.
Yeah,
SEMA's going to be bigger than ever.
I'm hosting videos. I'm hosting a daily video for SEMA that'll go up every day at the show. And I think their website, their enthusiast website, is enjoythedrive.com.
Mm-hmm.
Check those out. But it's gonna be cool.
Luke's got himself a BMW 2002, brakes on a weekly basis, wants to know to give up on his dream. Weirdest thing I've ever carried, an expensive car. Oh, yeah, I've done a lot of that kind of stuff. Let's talk to Luke. Let's not talk to Luke. I'll answer Luke.
Yeah, these are Facebook questions, Twitter questions.
Here's the thing. When it comes to driving an old car, it's going to break down. And if you're going to have it as your primary source of transportation, you're going to be bitterly disappointed.
Right.
If, in fact, it's a car that you can either drive over to the Cars and Coffee or not drive, depending on whether the fuel pump's working or not this week, or what have you, then it takes all the pressure off it, and you don't count on it.
Right.
It just becomes pleasurable at that point.
So the more you drive these older cars, the more you start leaning toward making some of the modifications that make it more of a modern car, some of the brakes and steering and things like that.
You can see, like, it's easy to go, look, it doesn't look quite right when you pop the hood, but get the electronic fan.
That's right. And you see Leno's doing a lot of that on his cars. He's putting suspension and big brakes. He takes all the original stuff off, puts it in a box somewhere, and then he makes them a little more drivable. But like you're saying, if you're just doing like Cars and Coffee on the weekend, then take your really clean, all original car out for the weekend. But if you got to drive it every day.
Yeah. You know. And you shouldn't look really just from a safety standpoint. Driving a car from the 70s as a his name was Luke, right? So
yeah.
I'm assuming he's white because there's never been a Mexican, a black, or an Asian named Luke. You're as a white young male, the statistically the best way, the easiest way for you to buy it is to buy it on the road.
Yeah.
If you're not in a gang. You know what I mean? Statistically,
right.
You're not going to die of complications because of a heart valve problem or something when you're a young white male. It's just you're going to buy it on the road. So when things out statistically, that's the highest likelihood of you buying it.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't want to make the 1970s car with zero airbags and zero crumple zones your commuter.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. I feel the same way about motorcycles. I think motorcycles are fun and cool and go out on a Sunday with a group of dudes.
Yeah.
And go up to the rock store, the candy store, whatever it is up there and carve it up. But just driving every day and eventually your number's going to come
up. Man, the guys that cut through me on traffic because out here you can lane split.
I'm jealous of those guys though because I
know,
to do
but
that.
It's like, how do they just not bounce off car doors like a pinball? It's just like those guys. I mean, they're good, but
they don't. You know what I noticed sitting, spending the better part of my life sitting on the 5 the last few weeks? They don't honk.
No.
Motorcycles don't honk. You know, they throw revs.
Yeah, they throw revs.
That's
easier.
A passive aggressive
Plus,
way
that's
of doing
the manly
it.
Way of doing it. When you get out of the way, they give you a little heads up sometimes, a little thank you.
Yeah. Nah, not anymore. They used to. Their dads would do it. Weirdest thing you've ever carried in an expensive car, most expensive thing.
My brother.
He's had a super cheap car or truck. I have definitely done the thing where I was driving something exotic for a week and pulled up to the Home Depot.
Well, yeah, you took the Porsche, the Panamera Turbo S, the like $214,000, and you bought, I don't know, mulch or something at...
No.
Maybe you went to Harbor Freight.
I went to Harbor Freight and like Arleta.
Like the ghetto Harbor Freight.
I literally was pulling up next to 70s and early 80s vintage Toyota and Nissan mini trucks with the gardening cage, the shark cage of
shark
gardening
cage.
Tools.
So, the mini truck with the shark cage.
With
is
the
classic.
Shark cage full of leaf blowers in there. It's literally slid in between two of those things.
Those are going to show up at the Meekup auction
in
soon.
My $215,000 car to buy like a cut off, a trim router and a random or like a couple of cheap grinders at the Harbor Freight. And I don't know where the closest one is, like, I don't know, it's Arleta. It's like it's past Pasadena out here. Oh, there's a North Hollywood one, which is equally as dicey. But for some reason, I went out to this one.
Yeah.
And I was with my like electric blue Panamera with the twin superchargers on it. But they must have thought I was packing. No one fucked around with me. So that would probably I've done a lot of that.
It makes it weird because of the statue of the car. Not you didn't buy anything weird, really.
No, I didn't buy anything weird.
Yeah, I feel like this is probably a better question for Ray. I feel like Ray carries weird shit.
Adam had a bunch of pot brownies in his car the other night.
Oh yeah, that old bucket of pot brownies a guy gave me, and I had that in the trunk of the
a bucket?
Jag.
That's to be the one time you get
well,
pulled
a
over.
Box of pot brownies in the I threw it in the trunk of the Jag. So I was transporting drugs that way. Let's see, electronically assisted steering compared to hydraulic or hydro assisted.
Right. So here's the thing: is a lot of the cars that we've brought onto the show and you've driven have electronic steering. but you may not even know it yet because it's not something we bring up in most of the shows. But a lot of the new cars, even the new Mustang, is electronic steering.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, it is.
Yeah. And what's interesting is in my opinion, I think it's fine. I think, you know, you read some of the magazines and the guys that drive these cars and test them all the time. They're like, well, the feedback isn't right and all that stuff. And that's true. But for most people, they're not going to notice much of a difference. And the upsell is we're trying to take as much load off the engine as possible to increase fuel mileage.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So you're not, meaning the crank is not turning a pump.
Right. Which is a couple of horsepower, or in this case, maybe a mile per gallon or something. They're trying to get as much as you possibly can.
The crank, well, stop me if I'm wrong, though. You're turning a distributor. The more stuff you run off the distributor, the more the draw is, or you're just running off the battery. The distributor's just constantly charging the battery. Maybe
so all these
battery,
new cars.
Two batteries?
All these new cars have coil-on plug. There's no distributor.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm an alternator. Screw
right.
Alternator.
So you're turning an alternator. But some cars, I think it's BMW that has an alternator disconnect. That it goes on and off, kind of like the start-stop feature of some of the engines today.
Yeah.
They have that for the alternator that it only needs
once
it when
the battery's charged.
Right. Or if you flip on your stereo and your AC and all a bunch of, you know, all your crap in your car, you know, like the start-stop feature, you know, if you have the air off and you're driving down the street and it's cool out and just the vents open, that start-stop feature goes off and on more often. But once you have the air turned up and it needs to keep the car cool, then that feature doesn't work as often. They're trying to make it smarter. So electric power steering, I don't have a problem with. I think it's getting a lot better. Drive something like the new Porsche that has electric power steering, and you realize that they're getting it dialed in pretty well. And what's cool is some of the cars like... Some of the cars that have like sport modes and comfort modes, they can dial in the feedback of that electric power steering now because it's electric. You can change how it feels. So that's kind of cool. And the aftermarket comes out with electric power steering options. So you can take your old Lamborghini or your old Mustang and you can put electric power steering in it and you can adjust it with a dial on how much feedback that you want, which is really cool because if you can't package a power steering pump into a vintage car, the electric power steering is a motor that attaches onto the column, in which case you can probably get power steering in a bunch of vintage cars that you never even think about.
They say Chevy, Jeff has brought this up, Chevy Malibu says it saves 2.5, as much as 2.5, which you always got to look out for because we grew up in an era when it's like this header can add as much as 7 horsepower. Yeah, that's it.
That's at peak.
10,000 RPM.
There's literally like a 10 RPM zone where it peaks in that area.
And does dramatically hurt your low end, by the way, which they never really explained.
Right.
But as much as, and owners 12 gallons of fuel per year. So kind of what they do is they go, can save as much, and then they go with some lofty goal, and then they go, and that translates into, and it's like, not so fast, because it doesn't translate into it, because it's not that much.
Right.
You've done the spurious math, and now you've done the happy math.
Right. It could total. So they're saying it's 2.5% better fuel mileage on the Malibu because of electric power steering.
Yeah, well, let me say this.
Okay.
Everybody.
I don't have a problem with it.
Look, you take this. You take this kind of stuff. You take front hood vents that close automatically for aerodynamic purposes once you're at speed and you don't need the air passing through. Obviously, when you're in bumper-to-bumper traffic like I am going to the fucking Dana Point, you need your vents open, but at speed. So somebody goes, what's that add up to be? It's like, I don't know, 1% or 2%, you know? Well, what's the electronic thing? 1% or 2%. Well, what's using a synthetic oil that has, you know, that lets parts move easier and more freely? Yeah. What's that add up to be? I don't know, 1% or 2%. Well, if you say that about 15 times, eventually you arrive at a number.
That's right.
And that number is significant.
Right.
And that's the way math works, kiddies. So what does this all little stuff have to do? Nothing. Put it all together. Yeah. Now we're looking at 15%, and now we're saving some money.
I mean, even on the start-stop feature that annoys the hell out of me, the Lamborghini Aventador with its giant naturally aspirated 12-cylinder, the new one has cylinder deactivation for half the engine.
Wow. It doesn't...
It shuts off 6 of the cylinders.
The front half or the back half.
I think it's staggered, Or maybe it's side to side and it does like an inline six.
It can't
six.
Go now.
But
it can't just slant over to one side.
It'll change from bank to bank every 2 minutes to keep the wear evenly on the engine.
Jesus.
I don't know what does it get from 11 miles to the gallon to 12.5. But that percentage wise, that's probably huge.
Well, look, when you're only getting 11 and you can get to 12.5, you're 10%, you know.
Perfect.
All right. Victor wants to know the Cortina GT. I like that car. Or the Fiat 135. I remember those. Better than the 510 of their era. The Fiat 135 is like the fastbacky Fiat. Or is that the box Fiat? Does they have a they did a kind of fastbacky one that looks sort of like that BMW 2002 fastbacky one. To find a picture of that one. I'm not that hip on the Fiat.
The 510 has been growing on me because you own a bunch and I'm staring at it. I'm like, I kind of like the boxy style to it. So the Fiat, that's not the 135.
Yeah, well, fine. I think the Fiat 135 is just a box Fiat. But anyway, they sold a lot of those back in the day. Cortina, not so much over here. I like the Cortina. I like the Fiat. Look, they're all shit outside of race trim. Otherwise, they're just Econo boxes in non-race trim.
Yeah. When you see the 510 without the slight little fender flares to it and the low stance and the wide wheels, then you're like,
Yeah, but it's meant to be, because the base price was $1,300 in 1971, and it was meant to get you. I mean, you could literally get, you think about it, how far ahead of the game were the Japanese. Here they are. I don't know. You guys can help me figure this out. But I don't know when a four-door 510, they had a 510 wagon too, but like a four-door 510, 69. I don't know when they started importing it to the States, 68, 69, 70. I don't know. Probably did the two-door for a couple of years and then the four-door. But here you are with a four-door car. It costs next to nothing. It's bulletproof. I mean, just that L18 or that L1600 motor is just unbreakable. And you're getting great mileage. You have a totally reliable car. You can put four adults in it. And America is cranking out the Matador and big old piles of gas-guzzling shit with V8s that aren't doing anything. And meanwhile, these little Econo boxes are going out and chewing up the world. World's best car for $2,000 car.
That was a Datsun ad. That was a Datsun ad back in who knows when.
Well, it says groovy in big letters on top, so I'm going to say 69. But
I wasn't alive.
It's a $2,000 car that'll get you everywhere, that's bulletproof. And, you know, obviously there's been safety innovations and things like that, but I don't know that there's that many cars, you know, these days. This is 1960s technology. You know, you're still getting great mileage back in the day. You still have crazy reliability. You still have some safety worked into the uniframe and stuff like that, unibody. You have a very good piece of engineering for a very cheap price for a young family that, you know, it rivals some of the cars from today. And that's what the Japanese were doing back in the day.
It rivals them as value.
Yeah. By the way, in 2012, that car would be $12,000, basically. So
1969, it was $2,000. Today, it would be $12,000.
Yeah.
Can you get anything for $12,000 now?
What would it be
like a base?
Ford Festiva?
Fiesta.
Fiesta. Fuck, they need both.
You're still in the 80s.
All right. Ford Fiesta.
Maybe a base Fiat 500, like a stripped Fiat 500. I feel like they're like $16,000, but maybe...
I was behind a Toyota Yaris because I took note because the motherfucker was in the left lane. And I was like, really, buddy?
It's not even fast enough to be in the left lane. There's no way, even downhill in the wind, it would not be fast enough.
My refrigerator and oven costs more than your car. And yet you insist on being in the left lane. Which is it? Which is it, Ducho? Yeah. Maybe the Yaris. Like I said, I remember the Fiesta. We talked to the Ford people about maybe starting at 11.5 or something. But once you get the thing out the door, you gotta be above something. You know, average is between 16 and 22 on the Fiat. I don't know. Again, yeah. I don't. Maybe they advertise something at 12 and a half or something like that. But either way, it's going to roll over.
So I just got this.
Where is my 135 Fiat? Is that just the box Fiat? I think it is. I can't remember my. I can't remember if the Fiat 135 is just that pure boxed Fiat or not. Anyway, you just got what?
Our buddy Dan Edmonds is out at the track. He was supposed to come in here today. He's out at the track testing cars. You have an Audi A7.
Mm-hmm.
He's out there testing the new RS7. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to give the numbers away, but I think he said it just beat the new Corvette in the quarter mile.
Wow!
That's how fast that fucking Audi is.
Well, you know me. I love Audis, and I like to talk shit about Corvette. That's about four-wheel drive.
I believe so.
All-wheel drive.
Yeah.
And, right there.
And just turbo. Turbo is just good low on torque.
No. You need the horsepower to back it up. But I think if that Audi beat the new Vette in the quarter mile, the
traction.
The Vette weighs less, mm-hmm. right? Absolutely. I mean, the Vette must, with all the shit the Vette's made out of.
Yeah, it weighs less.
The Vette's got to weigh 550 pounds less than that car. That's an all-wheel drive, Autobahn, whatever. And the Vette's got 75 horsepower, probably. I don't know which Vette they got out there. Maybe 50 horsepower.
Well,
I don't know.
The Vette's like 450 horse.
Oh, it's a 450. It's not the R.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
no,
not the
just
Z.
The new C7 Vette, which is fast, and it's a great car. Hopefully we'll get one in here.
But
it's amazing to see the Audi
it's given up,
go.
So now I'll revise that statement. The R, is that a V8 then in the Audi?
The Audi, I believe, is a new twin-turbo 8-cylinder.
So the Vette's given up 50 horsepower, or maybe 60.
Right.
And,
Jeff, you can look it up. The new RS7.
But it's picking up. It's also 500 horsepower. But that's impressive. But what's doing it in the quarter mile, I think, is the all-wheel drive and the hookup. I'll bet you that Audi launches.
We'll find out. We'll get Dan in here. We'll find out.
I would predict that at the 500-foot mark, the Audi's ahead and the Vette starts pulling it. As it starts getting to the quarter mile.
Yeah.
And if that thing were half mile, the Vette might take it. Either way, that's pretty bitching that you can buy a four-door.
That's cool. I mean, we were talking earlier even about the new Jaguar, the XJR, the big one.
Mm-hmm.
The big one weighs, I think, a little less than your XFR because it's all aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
And with the 550 horse engine, it does 0 to 60 in like 4 seconds flat. And that's the biggest Jag in their lineup, basically. It's 4 seconds, which is awesome.
Unbelievable.
It's got to have like 15-inch pizza pan discs.
Right.
Because how do you stop a 4,500-pound
car? You run in the back of a semi. let's see. All right.
There's Fiat.
We got the Fiat 125.
I think 135 was a typo because I'm not finding 135 model anywhere.
Was there a BMW 135 that I'm
There's a recent one.
Making up? Oh, that's the recent one. Yeah, that's
the new
one series.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And they have a 2 series and a 4 series. It's getting nuts.
Listen, don't ask me. I like the fucking 510, obviously. That's my car. Race that car. I like those cars.
Yeah. Jeff needs a 510 wagon. He's kind of the wagon master in the 510 wagon.
Yeah.
Be awesome.
Someone wants to know, fastest either of you have ever driven? Not
legally?
That fast. Yeah. I've never done one of those, close the road runs. I've done the... I'm driving the DB9 to Palm Springs. Let's let those ponies run free for half a mile. But I'm so freaked out over the cops.
But
I got up to like 135 or 140 or something.
When you're in your race car in one of the big cars, I mean, you're going 130.
Yeah, if I could, if I ever take a big car to Fontana.
If you get out on the oval.
Then you're going to see 160 in that car.
I did some laps in a stock car on the oval out there,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of limited what we were allowed to do, but I was doing about 145 up there. Now, it's different. Like, you can get in a street car, and I can blast down Wilshire Boulevard in the middle of the night in an R8 mm-hmm. and hit 130 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. But getting on the track and doing it in a race car and everything's shaking and vibrating and all this noise and doing 140 or something, that's kind of fun. It's fun to do.
Well,
when you're in a car, you can't hear shit outside. Look, you're in a new Jag and you can't hear anything.
It's
different.
Here's the thing, everybody. Sensation of speed. Your experience of speed. If you travel in commercial airlines, I've said this many times, you go 560 miles an hour, but it's nothing. It feels like nothing.
Yeah.
You feel it on the takeoff. You get pushed back in your seat.
Right.
And you feel it on the landing a little bit. But once you're at cruising altitude, you're walking around, taking a piss, having a Bloody Mary, playing a video game. So
have you ever gone 60 miles an hour in a boat?
Right. That's
nuts.
That's
you feel like you're doing 100 and you're bouncing off the water and it feels like you're bouncing off of asphalt.
You go to outer space, you can go 17,000 miles an hour and have nothing. Have fun chasing your toothpaste around.
Pee in a tube.
And pee in a tube, yes. So it's nothing. By the way, I don't know, what's the how many miles an hour is the Earth spinning at? Is it depending on where you are? I guess if you're on the equator, you're moving at thousands of miles an hour, or at least into the 1,300 miles an hour, whatever it is. If you live in Ecuador, do you feel it? No, you don't feel it. So
I do. I lose my balance all the time
when you're in Ecuador.
Yeah, only when I'm in Ecuador.
What is speed? Speed is the sensation of being pushed back in said chair or boat or shopping cart or whatever you're in or on. It's 1,070 miles an hour as the Earth's rotation.
We're hauling ass now.
We're hauling ass. Anyone feel it? Or we're just going to have another hit off my coffee cup. That's the point. It's the sensation. And that's what I always say. Look, when you're in that Datsun 510 and there's no windows in the thing and you're rattling all over the place, or especially in the Roadster and there's no windshield, and you have drum brakes and a live axle and leaf rings and the thing's fighting you all the way and no power or anything, and the brake feels like just you're pushing against a cinder block wall, that's a sensation.
And when you're coming up on somebody at 140 who's doing 120, it happens very quickly. It happens a lot quicker than you think it does.
Yes. So the 20 miles an hour, which may not sound like too much, is huge. And I can tell you that if you do one of those races at like Laguna Seca and you're averaging 136 in your laps and there's a guy who's averaging 132, when he's passing you fast.
Yeah.
That's 4 seconds. On a course that's 2.3 miles long. That's a long circle. He's only doing it 4 seconds a lap faster than you. He is crushing you. He's coming up fast in your. So what is speed? I don't know, but I know it when I feel it. That would be the answer.
Yeah,
to
when
that.
It scares you. When
that's
it scares
right.
you, then you're going fast.
All right, one last question. Cody's got a question. Why don't you read that? It's long.
Cody says, I'm interested in getting an F1 car as an investment / track day car to do a local Miller Motorsports track. I think that's the one in Colorado, Utah. My question is, what decade do you suggest is the best get for your bang for your buck or return in your investment down the line? That's a tough question for me because I don't do a lot of like window shopping for vintage F1 cars. So
I keep
there
an
you
eye
go.
On that stuff.
There's an era that you like, but he's saying what's best investment?
Well, I think probably because of the movie Rush, and this is my own personal preference, to me the sweet spot in F1 would probably be, 69 to 79, right in there. I'm trying to think of when there was a point when the things just looked like Formula V's or what have you. And then at a certain point, they started getting some really big barrels on there, and the John Player Special showed up, and the Elf showed up. And they started making those changes in the probably the late 60s, early 70s. Then once you get past 80s, they get into a different kind of front end and a different kind of downforce system and wing and things like that.
Yeah.
And it got a little too far. To me, the sweetest spot is like 76, just right in the middle there.
Yeah. And we see a handful of those at some of the vintage races and shows we go to. I mean, you could buy what you think is cool, which one you like the best and you want to drive, And if it's really an investment car, it's no different than buying any other classic or vintage car or anything else. You want to find the best deal. In the case of a race car, does it have any race history? How many were made?
Find me a car from 69, Jeff. I would say probably based on Rush and, you know, again, who drove the car, what was the team,
right,
what was the livery, so on and so forth. Obviously, if you could find a John Player Special Lotus or an Elf car or something like that, but all those are spoken
right
for in some museum somewhere for the most part. But like the car that James Hunt drove in, I don't know, the 1982 season or something is up for, yeah, 69 is probably just a little early for me. I'd probably go more like 72 through 79. But again, the sweet spot being 75, 76, 77.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to be a good investment. Obviously, that's a mechanically difficult car.
Right.
I mean, I don't, you know, look, it'd be great to get a Ferrari V12 and blah, blah, blah. But for me, I'd be thinking more of a Cosworth, you know,
right,
style thing that would be a little easier to work on or what have
if
you.
If Cody is going to drive it a little bit and take it to some track days and stuff, then just know that every time you go, a V12 has twice as many parts to break than the V6 or anything like that, right?
Yeah, so. I'm trying to think, and I don't know a ton about F1, but I do know, you know, Cosworth was building engines. And I don't think there were many four cylinders out there, or even V6s. I don't know. I think Cosworth was running a V8. We'd have to figure it out. I'd be curious because I just didn't know that much. I know Ferrari had a V12 and things like that. But I'd say the 70, 71, 72 through 79, and then it starts getting somewhere around early 80s, it starts going south.
I'd be curious to know about the engines. When did they start going into turbos and things like that?
I'm curious what engines, like in 1976, like Cosworth was doing
what
a V8.
What was the F1 engine and who was...
And I don't even know what the rules were. There was probably simply, I'm guessing back in the day, there was probably just a displacement cap.
Right. But who did everybody build their own engines then, or was like Cosworth the main supplier? Like today, there's, you know, a handful of engine builders, and like Indy has what two or three engine builders. Honda's building engines.
I think
Chevy and Honda are building engines now
right,
for Indy. Or
and those
Honda's
are
going to bring an engine back.
Twin turbocharged V6s, I think they said. Small displacement, like 2.2, 2.4, something like that.
Yeah.
All right. Where the hell were we? Yes. You can look into the motors. I'm going to look into one of our fine new sponsors. Ta-da. You like shopping online? It's convenient, right? You like the discounts? But the coupon codes, they don't work. Damn it. You know what it's like. You go online, you find some car parts, you go to the coupon code, and...
I am a frugal shopper, my friend.
No,
I need the
do.
Coupons.
Well, listen, anybody who drives a Pathfinder that a tree landed on has to count their nickels. That's
you know,
right.
You bitch about it, but now you want that Pathfinder.
I need the motor.
For the motor.
I need the
but
block.
But I sold it.
What? Yep. Use Tada, TADA.com. They'll tell you when the coupon was last used and verified by the buyer, so it's going to actually work this time. And whatever you like, Advanced Auto Parts, TireBuyer.com, CarParts.com, car anything. Over 6,000 stores, electronics, clothes, vitamins, pet gear. I don't even know what the hell pet gear is, but I don't
pet
want
gear.
It. Yeah, you got to get gear for your pets. Everything you need, you get online.
When they go to battle.
And the coupon codes they represent actually work. So check out Tada today. Tada.com and start saving. Tada.com is the easiest way to save for your online purchase. Anyway, Google Tada.com and watch the doors of life open for you. Once again, just hit Google and go TADA.com. Just Google it. Tada.com and let the savings begin. Also, you can check out the eBay.
Yeah.
That's right.
ebaymotorsblog.com. Check that out.
Yeah. And you can go to the Amazon banner and hit the CarCast show and, you know, click through, show us a little love. Contribute through the PayPal at carcastshow.com. Throw a couple bucks. We throw a little knowledge your way. Throw a couple bucks our way, man. Yeah. Keep this party going. I know
gotta
you
go
guys
to SEMA next week.
Like the show? Yeah. You gotta buy a plane ticket. You got to get a hotel room. Well, make it motel. But either way, how about it?
Sleeping in the Pathfinder. We're on a budget.
Yeah, eBay Motors, man. I got my blog up there. Yeah. And it's got... oh, yeah. We got to talk about that for a second real quick. And you can check out my blog, or you can go to ebaymotorsblog.com, and you can just go to the app and check it out, man. I was just on eBay looking at some street lamps the other night.
Yeah.
I look at car parts. I just look at everything.
Street lamps.
Street lamps. LA municipal street lamps from the 30s that some guy is selling. And
are
like
you,
more parts.
Are you in the market?
I'm put in a bid.
Okay.
Put in a bid.
All right.
It's not met his lofty goals yet, but we'll figure that one out. We'll come together.
All right.
Also, our good friend Hal Needham passed away, and he just passed away October 25th. And the guy was a paratrooper during the Korean War. He was a tree topper. He was... This guy was a stuntman and a producer, and a guy worked with, you know, Burt Reynolds, and he did all the... You know, he did all the Hoopers and the Gumball Rallies and all the Smoking the Bandit. I mean, I don't know if he started Stunts Unlimited. Is that him? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just a pioneer and just one of these guys that won't be replaced by today's new brand of puss who's coming up to take his place. Yeah. He's just old school. He's Hal Needham. He, as a matter of fact, in a weird way, I don't think Hal Needham could understand the society we're living in now with the, you know, all the anti-bullying campaigns and the, click it or ticket and all this other bullshit. He's probably happy. He's gone. He's good. Gone. Done. Either way, he's an unbelievable American, and he will be missed. All right. We have a car out in the parking lot.
Yeah, we got a new Lexus.
New Lexus?
Let's check it out.
Prototype. Let's go check it out.
Hey, everyone. It's me, Allison, from Allison Rosen is your new best friend. On Thursday, Gary and Chris got along better than ever.
It's not like I stopped in the middle lane.
No, but there could have been someone coming down the right-hand
lane. I'm aware of my surroundings. I can know if I can make that turn or not.
But the person behind you is not expecting a turn from the middle lane.
It affects their commute in no way if I turn right in front of them.
What if they weren't paying attention? They had to slam on their brakes and you caused a fender bender.
That's their fault. Ooh, I get money. Sweet.
Was there someone behind you?
Yeah. No.
Yes, there was. It was La Brea at 6:55 on a weeknight.
That just happened.
And then on Monday, I sat down with Michael Showalter from The State, Wet Hot American Summer, and a ton of others, and he told this story.
So every time we had a meeting with James Dixon, it was us, it was 11 people and James Dixon. and we would always be in the conference room, and we would be talking about some project or another, and we were talking about something, and I was asking questions, you know, wanting to get specification on one thing or another, and he said, hey. This is show business, not Showalter, okay?
Subscribe to Allison Rosen as your new best friend on iTunes or go to AllisonRosen.com. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. I love you.
Allison's your new best friend.
Well, Matt, what did you bring us today?
This is the 2014 Lexus IS 350. Now, you had the ISF, which we really love that car. Mm-hmm. This is the next evolution of that car. Completely new platform. And it is an amazing car. Like, for me, I just thought it was such a pleasure to drive, and I just recently got it. This is actually a pre-production prototype. I think the cars are actually being delivered into the dealers now, but this one that the media's been using is a bit of a prototype. It's a little bit longer on the wheelbase, which gives it a little bit smoother ride compared to the last generation. The suspension's dialed in to be a little bit smoother to take advantage of a much stiffer structure. Mm-hmm. So they can be much more precise on it. But as this car sits, this thing is amazing. It's got a 306 horsepower V6. It's basically a carryover from the previous generation, but it moves this car to 0 to 60 in 5.5 seconds.
Wow.
And this isn't the crazy super fast like ISF version.
This is the big, this is the sort of the base.
Yeah, the lines of the car, I think of it's one of those things like you're going to love it or you're going to hate it. I kind of like it, what they're doing on the tail section.
It's got a little of the new Cadillac in it to some degree.
It's got that spindle grille we saw in the GS.
Right.
And if these daytime running lights give you that Lexus logo in the light.
Right.
Sort of the L. I mean, obviously, they're flipped on different sides, but it's a really kind of a neat car.
I'll tell you, one of the things I like about this car is I like, talked about this before, the tire that has the half-inch
the lip guard,
scuffed,
the rim protector or whatever.
Because every car I have, the tires are stretched and the rims are scuffed, and I love that notion. I mean, it should be mandatory. When all these cars start coming with nice rims and they're powder coated and they got the, you know, they got the smoked chrome on there,
yeah,
and then immediately Scuff City USA. I love that. And this is, looks like to be a pearl white.
The interior is even an upgrade from before. I mean, they really stepped up the luxury to it. I think it's gorgeous on the inside.
Yeah,
and keep in mind, this is like the 3 Series competitor or the C-Class Mercedes, so this isn't a $100,000 vehicle. This is the moneymaker for them, because this is the one that they'll sell tons of. It, you know, the competitor for the 3 Series, this is the car.
And this is not going to exist in a coupe, right? It's going to be a four-door?
I think it's only going to be a four-door, except the previous generation, they did a convertible hardtop, which was a two-door.
Right.
So they sort of made the coupe and the convertible sort of all-in-one.
Right.
Maybe they'll do that again. I'd love to see this as an ISF with something like 450 horsepower.
Yeah, they'll do something like that.
I'm sure they will.
Eventually. Is it it's automatic six-speed?
I think this one is seven-speed.
Look out. This one goes to 11.
It goes to 11.
You think the base price is going to be right about a 3 Series?
Yeah, it's about 40 grand. And this one, as it sits with a few options, is around 45,000.
Mm-hmm.
But for 45,000, I think this is a great car. That longer wheelbase that we're talking about, that gives it a little bit smoother ride, gives you more room in the back seat.
Yeah, for a car that does not look very big on the outside, it has plenty of room in the rear seat. I love the vented seats.
Heated and cooled.
And I just love how everything is so... the seats, it's funny because they're almost old school. They almost remind me of an old 911, where seats, ever since the Supra started coming into their crazy lumbar supports and side bolstering stuff, started getting crazy, they're now starting to smooth them out. Mm-hmm. A little bit, and where it looks like there's plenty of lateral support, they're not screaming at you,
yeah,
and in your face with it.
They getting in them, it's a pleasure to drive. Like, it's really just a fun for the smaller four-door luxury sedan that's out there.
All right, so if you're thinking
awesome.
About an Audi A4
or a 335 BMW,
right.
Maybe the Cadillac, maybe the ATS.
Right.
This is definitely something worth looking at as well.
All right. So now,
you want to fire it up? Let's.
Oh
it
yeah,
up.
Let's fire it up. You do it. I'll go around back.
All right.
Got a little throat to it.
Yeah, you know, it, like I said, it without being, you know, the $65,000 version, like the M version or the AMG version,
mm-hmm.
this not being the ISF, 0 to 60 in 5.5 seconds, still gets 26 miles per gallon on the freeway.
Listen, Porsche 928S in 1991 probably did it in 6.
Oh, yeah.
4.
Yeah,
you know,
this thing runs like 14 ones. Like, the fastest Mustang in the 90s couldn't break 14.0.
Right. Unbelievable. All right. So until next time, this is Adam Carolla. For Matt, the Motorator, DeAndrea saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.